Today's podcast is brought to you by drinkers like you. To help support the show, visit patreon.com/haveadrinkshow.
Looks like we're heading back to France for some wine. This time it's Beaujolais, possibly the Frenchiest wine name of all time. Or maybe we just need to look it up in the Bectionary. We'll do a little digging to see what has kept this type of wine going for centuries, look at how it's made, and maybe, if we have time, have a drink.
Welcome to Have a Drink, a show where you learn along with us about what you drink. I'm Brittany Lee Walker.
I'm Justin Fraser.
I'm Christopher Walker.
And I'm Casey Price.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
Oh. How's it all been?
We've had a doozy of a week.
We're alive.
Dehydrated.
Fun case of food poisoning. Great times.
Been working its way through the household for about a week until we figured out the culprit.
You should have thrown out that spoiled milk.
Donuts. Who would have known you could get food poisoning from donuts?
Kroger.
Get some
donuts.
Listeria.
I don't know what it was, but it started with Emmett last Saturday. And that we were just, because we went to the museum, and we were like, well, he was, like, crawling around on the floor, acting like he was a cat for a bunch of the time. So we're like, eh, he probably picked something up there. And then it got Brittany that Sunday night into Monday morning. And then it should have been a signal Wednesday night when I was like, you know, Brittany had Emmett in the bath. I was just like, I'm going to be naughty and sneak into the kitchen and grab a snack. I was like, oh, there's some of those donuts left. And I popped over and I'm like, oh, they're not stale yet. Should have been.
Red flag.
Warning number one.
Red flag.
I eat two of them. By the next morning, I can't stop pooping or throwing up.
You become Chris Traeger in the episode where he has the flu in Parks and Rec, where you're just staring at the mirror going, stop pooping.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. Not good times.
Sounds not fun.
It's always so when it's food poisoning, the first time you throw up, you feel so much better. And it was like right before work. So I'm like, I feel like I could go to work. And then Brittany was like, you shouldn't go to work. And I was like, okay. And then at first I'm like, I was like, I'll get so much done around here. You know, I'll kind of use it as just like a productive day around the house. And then within 2 hours, I'm like down and out on the couch, like, I want to die.
So it begins.
Then the maintenance guy knocked on the door and I'm like, you don't want to come in here.
It's you don't bad. Want none of this, do we?
So that's how things have been for us. Just vomit, pleasant. Excrement everywhere. It's a non-zero number of times someone has crapped their pants in here this week.
I'm sorry. Casey, how have you been?
I have not crapped my pants this week.
I've got Baba right here.
I had to think about it though, so that's the scary part. We brewed today. I actually got back in the brew house for once in a while, so I brewed a Belgian dark strong. So that was fun.
Yeah.
Ooh, nice. Different from a normal day.
Not brewing good. A Bock coming into Bock season?
That's what I'm brewing on a week from today. I've got a Maybock.
All right.
That'll be fun. I'm looking forward to a Maybock.
I'm looking forward to a lot of Bocks right now.
I'm not a big Bock fan.
I mean, I look, it's just a nice little thing to change up the pace of all the other beers I've been having. So
Imperial Stouts and IPAs.
Yeah, like, pretty look, much. Sometimes you need a little variety in the life.
Look, Bock is the beer of Cincinnati, and I believe our now collaborator on the show, Jim, and the establishment he works at just did a collaboration with Braxton for a double barrel Bock. And I'm nice. Interested in getting a hold of a bottle of that. But
yeah.
He says it turned out very well.
Well, all right. Yeah. I got surprised with a 3-day weekend this weekend, so I'm not used to having like holidays.
It's a good kind of surprise. Yeah. Like food poisoning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That one's a bit different.
Distinction. Yeah.
Yeah, you find out you have a 3-day weekend and then immediately Brittany ropes you into babysitting for your 3-day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Unbeknownst to me, it's just kind of like like I find out she's like, "Oh yeah, ask Bob to. I don't know if he will." And I'm like, "What?" And then you're like, "Yeah, I'll be there." And I'm like, "What?"
Well, you know, I didn't, you know. There was the question there. I was like, sure.
To be fair, I was trying not to go that direction because I was like, he has his day off. Like, like he doesn't usually get this. So I asked literally, like, the family. I'm asking, like, anyone else I can think of. Nobody else has the day off. Like,
yeah.
The daycare's closed, Joe's. And, like, literally nobody else has the day off. And I'm like, this is dumb.
And I'm pretty sure the daycare's never taken President's Day off before.
That's a weird one for a daycare.
Yeah.
Like Mom barely took off Christmas Eve, so.
Yeah, I that was just the thing when he said that. I was like, oh, yeah, I guess the holiday, for whatever reason, they're taking it off, so sure.
I think it's because
I could be helpful.
I know it's because they just want our money, so she doesn't have to pay her employees to be there, because we have to pay for a full week unless they miss two or more days due to a COVID exposure at fault of the daycare. We have to pay for a full week unless that is the case, no matter what, no matter holiday, no matter what. So she's just like, anytime, any holiday to call, they'll be like, well, I'm just going to take your money.
Yeah. But, you know, good excuse to get to head up that way anyway. And I have Baba to bring you anyway, so.
Oh, yeah.
I can achieve things. I was actually going to ask, like, oh, yeah, well, they're busy, so I guess there's not really much reason to try to make a trip up there. And then he said, you want to babysit? And I was like, well, that is an excuse to get up there.
You want to influence our child?
There is also the Saki Social down at Void tomorrow for some special releases. So I'm looking forward to that. Plus food. They make food during those days. Some, as they usually have, like yakitori, some gyoza, some other things I can't remember the names of, but are tasty.
They're probably amazing. I can't think of a ton of different food things right now.
Yeah, they wheel out a big flat iron and we're just like, all right, get to work. So yeah.
Delicious. Well,
I guess once upon a time we had like a segment where we talked about news around here, didn't we?
We did, yeah. Back in the day. But it got a little lengthy, and guess what? It has its own show now. Also, yeah. There's usually more than 3 stories to talk about, which is all it was when we had it as a segment.
Yeah, we kept finding things we wanted to keep talking about.
Although at this point, considering how the luck we had this week, I was like...
But in Have a Drink News this week, we talked about how courageous Heineken is becoming. God. Just courageous with their
prices
on their beer.
It's just something in their PR department. Just, I don't know. Just think about some things, folks.
Yeah, we also found out that it's only Glens exist in Scotland, nowhere else.
Yep, Glen can't be anywhere else.
My uncle has to change his name. He can't. Can't keep going by that.
Glengarry Glenross?
Glenross, yep.
Well, I guess it's only in European courts, so as long as you're not trying to market your uncles in Europe, you're okay.
I mean, you don't know what he does. Go check out his own... No, never mind. I don't want to make a joke about my uncle's OnlyFans. That got real gross.
It's like a different direction.
Because you guys don't know my uncle, but I'm picturing that going like, nope. Also, he'd be real mad at that joke.
I like to think this is the first time he's listened to the show, and then he's like, what is this OnlyFans in his type?
Also, he would be really mad at this show, just in general. So,
okay,
fair enough. Yeah, and then I guess we also found out that McAllen really wants to have the oldest scotch.
Look, there can't be many more barrels older than what they're digging out now. An 81-year-old barrel. They're like, no, this bad boy's from 1940. And it's like, Jesus.
Just slapping the top of the barrel. This baby's got so many ABVs in it.
They so much tannin in this.
They did the Price is Right thing. They went like, ours is a year older than yours.
Yeah, they're like Glenfiddich.
Bid like $1 higher, and it's like, really?
Glenlivet.
Glenlivet. Yeah, not Glenfiddich. Glenlivet.
Exactly the problem.
Too many Glens.
Which is what we discussed last week on the show.
Yeah, that was the thing.
Too many Glens. Too many Glens.
You can find out all about Too Many Glens over on Have a Drink News. But
today, our main topic is all Beaujolais.
We're not that drunk. Seeking bastards.
We're not that drunk. We're not that drunk.
We're not that drunk.
You know, once upon a time, I wanted to redo a bunch of our sounders. So I'm like, no, I just like them.
Yeah. Like, at a certain point, you're like, no, it just seems right.
Maybe what we're drinking needs changed because it's Blizzard stuff and I'm not into Blizzard anymore.
We're done with them.
It's a mixture of things.
We've walked away from that long before the scandals, and then the scandals happened, and I'm like, yeah, I'm glad I left like 5 years before.
Yeah. Well, Beaujolais.
Speaking of scandals.
Beaujolais is the name of both a region in France and the kind of wine that comes from that region. Like many wines from France.
They're snooty.
And unoriginal in their naming. Beaujolais region is located in the center east of France, north of Lyon, France's gastronomical capital. Beaujolais sits just below Burgundy.
No, Burgundy. We established Burgundy. in the Burgundy episode. It is Burgundy.
As Brittany takes off her headset, going, "I can't deal with these." Can't deal with these people right now. In the Burgundy and above the Rhône Valley, red Beaujolais wine is made from the Gamay Noir grape. And I just saw that. Check out the gams on that grape.
The gams.
Oh God! Check out the gams on gam.
Would you say it was the oldest profession?
Yeah, let me warm up your wiener in the Bavarian method. Anyway, the Romans planted the first vines thousands of years ago in what is now known as the Beaujolais region from 7th century through the Middle Ages. Most of the viticulture winemaking was done by Benedictine monks.
Gasp! Benedictine monks,
you say?
did the alcohol making? I'm shocked.
Shocked, I say. It's like somewhat like a monk walking into one of the monasteries. I am shocked, shocked to find there's drinking going along in this establishment. Except there might have been a vow of silence, so.
Stern looks.
I find it funny right now because I assume Brittany has stepped away from the console for a moment. But every time Chris speaks, because of the way we've got it set up, it's her cam that comes on. So it looks like it's the invisible man that's talking on the show.
Yeah, that's why I had to set up our thing differently so I can at least see Chris when he's speaking. But yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's fine.
But anyway, for the history segment of this, so that it wasn't all history, we had to do a cut and just go 7th century through the Middle Ages.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. That's...
We had to condense this bad boy.
Oh, God. I wonder what's going to happen come... come the Napoleonic War.
Let's look back and see what happened last season.
That was the theme of last year. Napoleon's a jerk.
Napoleon really screwed up monasteries.
In the 10th century, the region got its name from the town Beaujeu. Beaujeu Rion, and was ruled by the lords of Beaujeu until the 15th century, when it was ceded to the Duchy of Burgundy.
Pass that duchy on the Burgundy side.
Pass the duchy on Burgundy side. That was good. I like that, Casey.
Go places.
The wines from Beaujolais were mostly confined to markets along the Saône and Rhône, particularly in the town of Lyon.
Has a nice rhyming scheme to it.
Does. Like, there's a very, there's a lot of that, I can't remember the name of that accent, but the little
confined
carrot
the
above the...
Along the Saône and Rhône, particularly in the town of Lyon.
We're still in Pass the Duchy.
I'm just telling you, it's another stanza. Mm-hmm. Building itself.
This is what happens when Brittany's away.
It is.
She can't leave us alone for too long, and we come up with parody versions of alcohol. She's going to come back, and we're sitting here like tuning instruments, going, all right, and a one, and a two, and a...
And she'll look and see how far we've made it in the doc, and it's one paragraph.
It's not even to the end of the page, just... All right. Winemaking was brought to France by the Romans, has been a central part of the region's economy for more than 2,000 years. Gamay was one of the more famous in July 31st, 1395, when Philip the Bold, Duke of Burgundy, issued an edict that all Gamay vines be ripped up within 5 months because it was a very bad and disloyal variety that was harmful to human creatures and caused ruin and desolation of the land by replacing Pinot Noir, and was full of significant and horrible bitterness. Man, that man had a hard on had a hate boner for.
You'll find out why.
Oh, what could it be? It's a disloyal variety of variety of vine. I'm certain it has nothing to do with the fact that it's probably not French. Let's see. So don't be surprised when you hear bad things about Gamay hating on this grape in an ancient French tradition. Philip had very good reason to ban Gamay from his lands, and it was called money. By the Middle Ages, Burgundy had already developed a reputation as producing the finest wines in the world, with Pinot Noir as its notable and excellent grape. This was the stuff of this stuff was liquid gold, French tea.
Give me the French Jeg Clampett.
I can't think of a line from Beverly Hillbillies at all. So, sorry. I'm going to have to disappoint you there.
Okay.
Also, I was trying to think of the French word for grandmother, and I was coming up dry, so.
Granny.
Right. Flowing overland and down the river, feeding princes and popes, and being fancy and delicious. Unfortunately for wine growers, Pinot Noir is notoriously fussy and annoying to grow. If you remember watching a grown man cry into a glass of wine in the movie Sideways, that's what his tragic monologue was about.
So we were going to play this monologue, which is why the note's in there, but after reviewing the monologue, because we've never seen the movie Sideways, but after watching the monologue, we've decided we need to make it an appointment viewing thing for this show, that we need to watch the movie Sideways.
All right.
But the monologue...
I've watched it multiple times. I love the movie.
The monologue is just too long, and it's just it's literally young Paul Giamatti, like, crying into a glass of wine for about 2 minutes, crying about as to why Pinot's his favorite grape and how... fussy.
Merlot sucks.
Yeah. I think he doesn't bring that up in that point. But
we have that ready for later.
Yeah. That might be the new what we're drinking.
For wine.
But, yeah, it's just him being about how Pinot's hard to grow, and it only grows in, like, a very specific set of circumstances.
I think our new what we're drinking thing should be past the Duchy on the left-hand side. Anyway, Gamay, on the other hand, is a cross between Pinot Noir and the archaic Gouais Blanc, and is extremely fertile, sturdy, high-yielding vine that can produce a lot of juice. It's like, oh, we have this excellent, easy to difficult to grow thing that we want to make sure that happened. Look over at the other one. You're just it's that line from Brooklyn Nine-Nine when They try to switch out the dogs for the police chief, and he just like, you're not Cheddar, you're just some common bitch.
Yeah. Exactly. I miss that show.
God, it's good. I need to finish the last season of it, but it's good.
It'll never come back, especially now that Rosa is a Disney princess star.
Yeah, I mean, fair. Look, they had a number of seasons. It had a really good run.
It did.
And it's from one of the guys who brought you Parks and Rec. Like, the guys who did Parks and Rec broke up. Well, you know, both went off. One did The Good Place and one did Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I'm
and
just like.
Both amazing.
Yeah, and I'm just like, God, these guys are just, like, teeing up stuff. Anyway, now, enter the Black Death. With the Black Plague spreading across France in the 14th century, generations of farmers were wiped out. I mean, one third of Europe was wiped out. A lot of people died.
Makes that whole, should we grow the fussy grape or the one that seems to just happen on its own decision a bit easier.
Like,
it's France.
Yeah, true. Since most everybody was dead and the people that survived had to keep chugging along, Gamay made life a lot easier. The 1390s, Gamay was taking over Burgundy, driving down quality and pissing off Philip the Bold. Winemakers of Burgundy were intensely opposed to the new law, and Philip even had the mayor of Bonneau replaced with one of his minions in order to enforce the edict. The years that followed were devastating to the economy of Burgundy, and much of the wealth and power was lost because there just wasn't enough wine, what with so many of the vines having been ripped up. The strategy ultimately proved correct, though, and after a couple of decades, Burgundy regained its status as the producer of the world's finest wines.
And you can revisit our Burgundy episode.
I desperately want, at some point, in a normal conversation, someone to talk about, like, the color of Burgundy. And, like,
one of you says
Burgundy,
and then everything kind of pauses, and people are like, wait, what? I want that to happen so badly.
And that may be Gamay, or Gamay.
Yeah, so. It probably is closer to Gamay. But the first time I saw it, I saw Gammy, and then I was like, just going to keep going with that. And
here we are.
I was in my head when I was writing it, I kept saying Gamay, and I was like, Bob could be right. I was like, I did not look up pronunciation guides.
As we tend to not do.
Yeah.
Just seemed easier for progress if I just picked a word and just kept going for a while.
As I stick with it the whole time.
As we've officially been called out for on Scotch, like, hey, you can find pronunciation guides. And it's like, no.
Yes, we can.
We're like 6 years into this. No pronunciation guides. We're just flying by the seat of our pants.
Throwing
our Appalachian dialect at it. We'll figure it out. So when the railway system connected to Beaujolais to Paris in the 19th century, Beaujolais wine became a fashionable choice in the city's bistros. As Lyon became a major industrial player, Beaujolais was the juice that slaked the thirst of the explosion of workers. Coming in at around 15% ABV, Beaujolais was ubiquitous in the burgeoning Lyon restaurant scene at the Brunchens. Or no.
Bouchons.
I just want it to be Brunchens.
It doesn't.
Yeah. Look, when I was writing, I was like, 15% at brunch? Hell yeah. Let's get lit. The traditional Leonis restaurant from this time, everyone must have been pretty hammered all the time. Good times.
Lyon.
It was a table.
And Lyonnaise?
It was a table.
Mayonnaise.
It was a table Leonis. Wine. A table wine at 15%. Let that sink in for a second. Oh, gosh. And it was the lifeblood of Lyonnaise. The famous phrase that Beaujolais is the third river of Lyon refers to this relationship, and so was Beaujolais an intrinsic part of life. Yeah. It was often sold as fake Burgundy and generally enjoyed a robust trade. Look, we're committed to that bit. Don't even question it. Most of the wine was mass-produced and cheap. And okay, if you want to know the problems with this region, they start here. They start with that very last line, and I want you to start counting in your head the problems until we get to the collapse.
This is where our troubles began.
It provided huge immediate cash flow to producers, incentivizing them to continue to make more and more of it. Producers would often add sugar with wines. The new vintages of wine used to be sent down the Saonnaise unfinished, still fermenting away in its barrel as it floated down towards the city, beginning the new tradition of
Nouveau. That's what I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Nouveau.
Yeah.
Oh, how risque, how scandalous. Are you into the Nouveau? Well, Beaujolais Nouveau, the first mention of Beaujolais Nouveau in the UK comes from the late 1890s, but by the 1970s, kind of a jump, it was a phenomenon unto itself. Beaujolais Nouveau is released to the public just weeks after it's made. It's Nouveau because it's the new wine of the just-picked vintage. About 25% of total wine production in Beaujolais is Nouveau.
It's the wine of the new generation.
Coming in at 2.7 million cases a year. The first legislation of wine origins, Appellation d'origine. Oh, we've said this a million times.
Controle. Yeah, I'm sorry, that sounds more Spanish AOC. Than it
was
French.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, we're just going to shorten it from here on. It'll be AOC. Came in 1901. Look, we all know what it is. And Beaujolais was declared its own region in 1936. With such legislation came rules about when that year's wine could be released and how much of it. Anyone looking for some? It's Thanksgiving, because this is known as the Thanksgiving wine. After World War II, the Beaujolais producer...
makes so much more sense.
It might make sense for you. There's never been wine at our Thanksgiving table.
There hasn't on mine either, but whenever I was looking at wine lists for Thanksgiving, like wines to have at Thanksgiving, this is one that keeps popping up.
Because it's obviously all just happenstance, because it pairs great with most foods, and that just happens to be the time of year that it's released. So it's like perfect for the North American market. We're like, that's the Thanksgiving mm-hmm. one.
Where Thanksgiving is where you eat most foods.
Yeah.
That's like the first thing that came into my head. I was like, so yeah, that checks out.
So after World War II, the Beaujolais producers were allowed to release more wine early, a measure of encouragement on behalf. Are we counting the things? Are we making that list of mm-hmm. things that are going wrong here? So after World War II, producers were allowed to release more wine early, a measure of encouragement on behalf of the government to try and lift everyone's spirits. And the phenomena of Beaujolais Nouveau continue to expand and grow. The most influential producer in the history of Beaujolais is Georges Debouf. I was just questioning in my mind if I was saying that right. Just going to take everyone's silence as encouragement. Also known as the King of Beaujolais, who brilliantly and successfully took Beaujolais Nouveau and turned it into an international marketing phenomenon in the 1980s.
Can we add to the list of problems with the Beaujolais wine is that it's may or may not been part of Vichy France and collaborating with the Germans during World War II?
I mean, we're not really adding that to the list.
Sorry. As we were talking, I was like, "Are they in?" And I was just doing a little searching as we went through. So I just thought, keep throwing stuff on the pile of problems.
There are a few. Look, it's still not collapsed in on itself. It was he who coined the phrase Beaujolais Nouveau est arrive, of which I didn't include it here, but they used to have signs at the docks on the rivers and at the warehouses when it would come in, and it was all part of his thing. He's like, look, make it a big deal that it's,
it's a marketing genius.
Yeah, when it's release day. Like, hey, guess what? Every Black Friday, we're going to release our bourbon barrel-aged stout, and the people will line up and rejoice. And they
do. I mean, he's not wrong. Exactly. They do.
And they still do, even when it's not special anymore.
They're coming out, and they're, the wine comes in on the, whatever vehicle they're export, importing it into or leaving it with or whatever, getting to the place, and you open up the thing, music's playing, and they just hear, I'm coming out. Dun,
dun. It was literally at Thanksgiving, around Thanksgiving. So this was like the first Black Friday release, we can call it. It was Beaujolais Nouveau. Anyway, the wines were shipped around the world and held in bond until midnight, when massive parties were thrown in celebration. Look, the guy knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Mr. Dubois passed away in early 2020. That's a hard one to know we were around for.
Yeah, honestly, that's not what I was expecting. Also, that's it's like, oh no, Slurms McKenzie died.
Yeah. But he can be credited as a pioneer and leader in the global wine trade. To this day, Japan imports 60 million liters a year. And they're one of the links I had, I put it down in the sources. You guys want to check it out? They have a picture of this. There is a wine spa where people can swim in it during the celebrations.
Nope. Look, I have a strict rule.
There are children swimming in it as it shows, like, the man overseeing it, pouring a fresh bottle in, and everyone's, like, trying to lap up the wine pouring from the bottle.
Jesus. No.
Well, you don't
no,
I have the one that everybody's peed in.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have a strict rule. This is the same thing that applies to, like, those beer spas where you can take baths and beers. I do not want any beer that's gone near my taint. It's a simple rule to live by, but I stick to it.
Well, remember your checklist of things that were going wrong. As other producers jumped on the money.
I'm adding wine to taint.
Wine.
Yeah.
Taint wine. As other producers jumped on the money, making bandwagon that Dubuff created, the market was flooded with a lot of crappy Beaujolais, and by the 1990s, its reputation was going down the drain fast like taint wine. That's not all that was going down the drain. What with the loss of interest and insane amount of volume being produced, In 2001, the French government ordered producers to dump over a million cases to keep the stuff from being completely worthless.
God.
Some scandals in the 2000s, including illegal capitalization or adding sugar and mixing Cruz with inferior wines, further degraded the reputation of Beaujolais. It's,
not been a good run for them.
So they we're in the 2000s, and they've hit rock bottom.
They have their prices.
They've hit taint.
Well, the appellations of this wine, there are 12 main appellations of Beaujolais wines with production in 96 villages. These areas are known for granite and schist soil in the north. Okay, and clay and sandstone soil in the south, which help give the Gamay grapes. Which help give the Gamay grapes develop a unique flavor that can't be mimicked elsewhere. Often Beaujolais wines get roped in with the more famous Beaujolais Nouveau, which debuts around Thanksgiving each year. While the younger wine is indeed a true Beaujolais, it is only one iteration of the vino. The three classifications of this French wine are Beaujolais AOC, Beaujolais Villages, and Beaujolais Cruz.
The lesser known cousin of Tom Cruise. He's French.
Oh, I thought it was a Ted Cruz.
No, we've been doing our best to stamp that family right out.
So Beaujolais AOC, the appellation covers all the region's 96 villages, but in practice, most basic Beaujolais come from the 60 villages in the southern part of the region. Beaujolais AOC wine accounts for about half of all Beaujolais wine and the vast majority of Beaujolais Nouveau. The Beaujolais Villages AOC, there are 39 villages that produce wine that can be labeled Beaujolais Villages. Many of them will also list the name of the village on the label. These wines are from schist and granite soils that give more sophisticated fruit and mineral notes than basic Beaujolais. Basic Beaujolais.
You one of them basic Beaujolais? I'm one of them basic Beaujolais bitches.
The Cru Beaujolais. So there are 10 Crus, top villages or areas, which is apparently what that means, which each have their own AOC. There are many producers within each Cru. The Crus are all located in the northern part of Beaujolais, arrayed in a row along the west bank of the, how are we saying this?
Saône?
Sound River. From north to south, the crews are Saint Amour. Got that one.
It's the only Juliana. One. That was the only one Juliana. With the pronunciation guide.
Julianus. Shanna. I'm just going to butcher these. And just
I don't
go
think you pronounce. My rule of thumb for French is don't pronounce an S.
See, I thought you do.
I assumed you. I don't know.
It doesn't. You know what? It doesn't matter because these are all going to be horrible.
You're going to butcher them one way or the other.
Yeah.
The Chablis.
Moulin Avent. Flore. Tiroblis. Morgan. Rainier. Broly. And.
No, that's a Dragon Ball villain. You can't.
Cote de Brûlis. Anyway, each Cru has slightly different terroir that results in a range of expressions of the Gamay grape, from the more tannic, earthy wines of Moulin Avent to the delicate floral wines of Flore. Don't know.
Look, you can't convince me that Broly retired from fighting as a Super Saiyan and started making wine.
So, the characteristics of this wine. All Beaujolais made from a single grape variety, Gamay, which is a thin-skinned red grape that is related to Pinot Noir. Structurally, Beaujolais wines made from Gamay are light-bodied, moderate in alcohol, low in tannin, and high in acidity. And the flavors commonly found across different Beaujolais include blackberry or bramble, I assume that's bramble berry, I'm not sure. Raspberry, cherry, cinnamon, violet, barnyard or earth?
One of the flavors is a color. Let's
a flower.
I mean, that's like saying orange.
Yeah, and it's also a color.
Beaujolais AOC wines tend to be simple and juicy with straightforward fruit flavors. Cru Beaujolais wines are more complex with floral and earthy notes, complementing the ripe fruit flavors.
I'm just picturing a bottle of Beaujolais wearing sweatpants that just say juicy on the butt.
That's one of the basic ones.
I think I broke Chris.
I want a Beaujolais Nouveau. That's what the label is. It's just a pair of sweatpants and they're juicy. It is called Basic Bitch. No, what it needs to be, since it comes out of Thanksgiving, it needs to be the backside of Joey's he wears the maternity pants on Friends for his Thanksgiving pants. Because they'll stretch out and they got room for his gut afterwards. And it says juicy across the ass. I need that. Oh, God.
Oh, dear. Anyway.
So, how's it made? Beaujolais Nouveaux. I don't know what just happened there.
You started coughing, that's what.
How it's made. Beaujolais Nouveau's unique fruitiness and drinkability comes from a winemaking process called carbonic maceration. Rather than being destemmed upon arrival at the winery, the Gamay grapes are left in whole bunches. The bunches are then put into a closed fermenter tank, which are pumped full of carbon dioxide. The gas causes intracellular fermentation, also called anaerobic or enzymatic fermentation, which begins within each individual grape, without the grapes first being crushed, though. That's the normal fashion of fermentation. You know, you see those frescoes of foot-pounding grapes.
I was going to say you do the I Love Lucy, and you...
Yeah.
Yep. After the juice within the grapes reach about 2 degrees of alcohol, I'm guessing that's probably equivalent of 2%. The grapes burst, so they create their own carbon dioxide inside as they are fermenting, and then that bursts open. So,
yeah,
never mind. I won't go there. It's kind of a gross analogy, but
I was gonna say, much like the fruit in our fruit assortment from Costco, that one New Year's when it was all fermenting on its own.
Carbonated grapes,
thanks to the wild yeast in our kitchen at that time. From all the sour beer we had been drinking.
Yeah.
There's natural yeasts on the grape skins that begins a regular alcoholic fermentation at that point to bring the wine up to its final alcohol content. Carbonic maceration also reduces the amount of tannin in the wine because Gamay is a grape variety that is low in tannins to begin with. Beaujolais Nouveau wines made with carbonic maceration are among the lowest tanning red wines you can buy. Hence the reason that you actually... can drink them young because the tannins don't have to fade away. Semi-carbonic maceration, a variation that emits the addition of carbon dioxide gas, happens naturally when grapes are put into the fermenter in whole bunches. The technique, however, does not result in as many fruity aromas compared to the full carbonic maceration, but lets more of the structural tannin remain. Semi-carbonic maceration is used on higher quality cru Beaujolais. So, where is Beaujolais now? It's in my hand. Well, it's become a hot spot for natural winemaking, and producers such as Marcel Lapierre have led the way for that trend by rejecting the mass-produced garbage from the 90s and 2000s by making small amounts of very good natural wine. The kids
natural
that were born...
Wine. Look, I held out as long as I could.
The kids that were born during the 70s and 80s, when Beaujolais was at its peak production, are scaling back, working with tiny parcels, and making some of the very fine wines indeed. These people saw their parents rise and fall and are not keen to make the same mistakes. They're proud of their terroir and their wines and more focused on the cru Beaujolais than the nouveaus. The wines being produced are varied, sometimes eschewing carbonic maceration entirely, and some of them are pretty darn powerful and have great aging potential. Through this beautiful region, though this beautiful region has seen many ups and downs, it's clear from the quality of the wine being produced now that they have a modern renaissance.
I mean, that tends to happen when, you know, everything goes to crap. It's time to, you know, usually it's like, all right, how do we fix it? How do we make it better?
All right.
All right.
Someone had a nice, fancy sounding glass.
Let's find out what we've all been drinking.
And if they want to drink Merlot, we're drinking Merlot.
Oh, no, if anybody orders Merlot, I'm leaving. I am not drinking any fucking Merlot!
I had to.
That movie has put me off Merlot, actually. it shouldn't be. Like, I try my best to not have that preconceived notion, but... After watching that movie, I was definitely off of the Merlot bandwagon.
That's awesome. That's why I'm saying we need to have a drinking night where we're drinking wine and watch Sideways. And yes, one of the wines we'll have to drink is Merlot.
Can't we just drink the one wine that I do like?
Malbec?
I thought it was Chianti.
I thought it was both.
Might be both, actually. I think I was okay with Malbec, but
that was the Argentina thing.
See, that's one of the reasons I think we'll like this one if we got a nouveau, because the Malbec was young.
Maybe. Mm. Anyway, what are we all drinking tonight? I know most of us are not drinking wine.
Yeah, we're not at all.
drinking beer because, you know, food poisoning. We're like not going to venture
we were,
down.
We were
that,
frightened of the wine.
Not venturing down the high ABV path.
Yeah. We started off with phase 3, TDH triple low ceilings, triple dry hopped, triple IPA with Citra and Mosaic. Delicious. Because phase 3. I'm just going to put
because
that in there.
Citra Mosaic. It's the, I want to say, what was the meme I shared before? It was like, it's the holiday recipe for Hallmark Channel movies. Citra Mosaic is basically the high-profile female lawyer from the big city moves back home to take over a mint farm or something from her parents.
To take over her family's Christmas tree farm.
Yeah, and falls in love with Hunky Stud, who does boring local like handyman work, but is the sexiest damn thing you've ever seen.
Yeah. That's
all right.
That's
then.
And wearing flannel, I'm assuming.
Sounds like
to be.
That's Citra Mosaic, because every brewery does it in some fashion for everything. Occasionally you throw in Amarillo. I mean, that's just
yeah.
that's that other guy that's also the high school sweetheart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's still in town.
Yep.
It's the competing, yeah. Yep. The first crush.
A little rough around the edges.
So that
who's she gonna pick?
I mean, that's great because Citra Mosaic, it's given you basically all the, especially in this one, because this is still on that phase 3 one, is still a an East Coast version with, you know, the like West Coast hop profile. So it's still soft, but gives you all the resin and citrus notes you want from a West Coast IPA. And then on top of that, because we're splitting, had to throw in, oh gosh, who is this even from? Oh, I should have remembered this from Whiskey Hill. Oh, guess that. Whiskey Hill Brewing Company from Westmont, Illinois. This is the Imperial Stout with cacao nibs and vanilla beans. Subtle Void is the name of that one, and it's pretty good. I've let it... not sit too long, but as many great beers do, they come to my beer fridge to die. because I did not get to them in a timely manner.
Right.
We did a beer and chocolate tasting pairing thing.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I got 5 pounds of nibs from the same person for a beer that I'm doing right now, an Imperial Stout with nibs in it.
Yum.
It'll be deliciousness.
You got to name one of them Tweak My Nibs.
I think I'm going to have to do that now.
It's got to be.
Wow.
Nib Tweaker.
Nib Tweaker. Do it. Please just do it. I want to see that. That's got to come across the labels. I need the TTB to have to approve Nib Tweaker.
I'm definitely bottling this one instead of canning, so that's a full on possibility. The TTB would have to do that.
I need it.
What are you drinking, Bob?
Look, no. Who's the one that does Bean Flicker? If they could get that approved.
I'm drinking Nib Tickler. I'm drinking Baba Yaga, the Mexican coffee variant from this year.
I was wondering how you were drinking whatever it was from just, you know, a giant plastic cup.
It's from the Oktoberfest cup because I have many of them, and I've just they were handy to grab and clean.
He felt like a savage drinking it out of the bomber.
No, they've actually to make them drinkable, they've put them in like regular sized bottles, so you don't have to feel like a monster.
Okay, that is very encouraging. Moving forward.
So when you get your delivery, you'll be able to drink them by yourself.
Thank God.
Yeah, that's the thing. I was like, I don't have to save this forever. I can just drink it because I feel like it, and that's a good feeling.
Can we go ahead and say that that is a great thing, or are there a few of us who are like, no, we don't want the giant 720 milliliter, you know, bottles. Give me a small 4-pack so I can, you know, I don't have to wait for a gathering or something to crack it open. I want to be able to have one by myself, maybe.
Well, I think that the whole lack of an ability to gather everybody's like,
Well, I mean, before that, Stone had already, before the pandemic, had moved to like Woot Stout being in smaller format.
Cans,
coming
for
up.
That matter,
yeah, yeah, coming. No, cans were post, like after.
Oh, okay.
After it started, but they had started breaking it down, and you could buy it in 4-packs. You could also get it in like the 720 format. You could get it in others as well. So I think everyone should. So, hey, Dark Lord, can we get that in instead of, you know, the mandatory 720s? Can we get like maybe a 720 and a 4-pack of 12-ouncers or something? Come on.
But I thought I had grabbed a different Baba Yaga until I cracked it open and drank it. And I was like, oh, this is spicier than I was expecting. And I look at it, oh, I had the Mexican coffee, which is good. There are a couple from this year that I actually do like better than this one, but this one, it's still Baba. It's still, but it does have a nice, like, kind of spicy note to it. But it is, it's dark, it's chocolatey, it's coffee. It's with a nice little hint of spice in there. So it's real good. I don't know its ABV. It's not on the bottle.
Because you
not that I could see.
It's Russian witch strong.
I was like 12% ish, I think is what I remember them saying at Baba Day, but who knows?
Yeah.
Strong enough. It'll get you there.
Makes you wonder how they got it packaged and out the door without an ABV on it.
There's probably something somewhere, but
it's not a requirement technically.
Oh, it's not?
Mm-mm. No, some states require it, but my understanding is that ABV is not a requirement on beer by the feds.
Oh, okay. So if it's not going to distro, you really don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, or even if it is in distro.
If it's not leaving the state, you don't have to worry about it, as long as your state doesn't.
Yeah, yeah, as long as the state doesn't. And there was something else. With labeling it, there actually are instances where states are like, you're not allowed to, unless you're doing it for some other reason, because for if the beer is over a certain percentage, because they're like, it's encouraging drinking, over drinking. They're like, you're labeling it, so people will want it more. Like, I mean, oh, this is a 13%er.
Well, yeah, that said, we do gravitate sometimes to alcohol that is of a higher ABV, because we're like, well, that
gets the job done.
Yeah.
Untappd says that particular variant is 14%.
That also sounds accurate. I like I said, I was just like, I just put it as like 12, maybe? It's, I mean, at bare minimum, it's 12.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, you were close, so.
All right, Casey, the only person who's drinking to style, and as far as I'm concerned, if I were to drink to style, I would have gone this brand.
Yeah, George Dubuff.
As stated Beaujolais, from the episode.
Beaujolais Nouveau. I had this one in my closets from 2018. It's completely aged out. It's probably 2 years past its prime. So it's flavorless almost, just because it's lost so much.
I was going to say, do we at Thanksgiving, do we all want to like go like on release day to a somewhere and pick up bottles of Nouveau, like fresh?
Fresh Nouveau?
Yeah, like do we get the hype? Do we want to do that? I kind of do.
There's a reason I had this one in my cellar. It's because I enjoy it. You know, it's a good wine. I just hadn't drank it in 4 years at this point. So it would have definitely been a lot better 4 years ago.
It's like me with KBS when I was cleaning out my cellar, and it's like, hey, I've got some like 6-year-old KBSs in here. Nah, they're going down the drain.
Yeah, they'd have been they'd been better a while back.
They'd have been better about 5 years ago.
Drink them if you got them, as they say.
Yep.
But you know what we say? We say you can subscribe and get some great resources at haveadrinkshow.com and follow us at haveadrinkshow on social media and twitch.tv.
Yep, and you can tell us your favorite drink, ask a question, or just leave some general feedback. You can use the email address feedback@haveadrinkshow.com or the feedback page on the website. Perhaps you feel like, you know, tying messages to squirrels and sending them off into the woods to see if they get to us. I know they're very unreliable messengers, so good luck.
We've held a tenuous peace with the squirrels.
I was waiting for pigeons, and you said squirrels, and I was like, what? It's happening? Okay.
Look, the squirrels still hold it against us for the tricks my grandfather played on them by tying empty Pepsi cans to nuts. Jeez.
Oh, dear.
All joking and fun aside, we'd like to remind everyone today's show was written by Tits McGee.
Yes.
Using sources from Lion Wine Tasting, VintnerProject.com, and Masterclass. Got a little artsy on you there. Masterclass. I love those sources. I got to say, they were nice, catty articles that included a lot of the jokes I would have made anyway. It made me very happy. But also, everyone, please drink responsibly.
Indeed. Yes.
All right. Oh, and I'm Tits McGee.
We assumed. We should always assume. So, you can check us out in another couple of weeks for the next live episode. And remember to check out patreon.com/haveadrinkshow. Once again, I'm Brittany Lee Walker.
I'm Justin Frazier.
I'm Christopher Walker.
And I'm Case Price. We shall see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
See you, Tits McGee.
Tits McGee. Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.